What's going on, everybody? I'm Johnny Brook. Welcome back to another episode of the Crafted Podcast. This is episode number 18. Podcast all about making stuff by hand, woodworking, metalworking, electronics, leatherworking, and more. If this is your first time joining us, we live stream every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We also put out new episodes every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and pretty much everywhere podcasts are available. We also just put out a new app on iOS and Android if you want to check that out. It's totally free, and just search for Crafted Podcast. So I am joined, as always, by my co-host, James Wright, but from Wood by Wright. How you doing, James?
I am doing fantastic once again. Thank you for asking, Johnny.
And Zach Herberholz from ZH Fabrications. What's going on, Zach?
Hola.
Cool. So, yeah, back again. Also, another thing I forgot to mention in the intro, we have a new Patreon page, which is just doing so, so well. Thank you all for your support. It means the
huge
world to us. Let me pull up the list of our
new
patrons.
Do we have enough to split a beer yet?
Oh, we have way more than enough to split a beer. It's kind of
amazing.
We
get one each?
Yeah, we get one each.
We can split a keg.
Yeah, so we've got new this week. We've got Nicholas Palacios, Robert Bakey, Terry Mulligan, Nick Stepp, and my mom, Debbie Brooke. So thank you to all
That's
of our
awesome.
New patrons. If you want to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/craftedpodcast. Got a bunch of really, really cool rewards there. And you guys are helping keep this show going. So thanks so much. So I guess let's go ahead and move into what we're working on. What do you guys got cooking? Who wants to kick us off?
I have been carving.
Yes, I've seen that.
I got another set. It's kind of like an addiction now, and I got another set of carving chisels, and I have like 60-some. But I use them all, okay? It's okay. I use them all. But I've never actually done sculptural 3D carving before. You know, I've done relief carving and chip carving and surface pattern carving, but I've never done like a 3D sculptural carving. And so that was kind of a new fun thing that I was working on this last week. And I actually booked out 2 whole days to do this carving, not really knowing how long I'd be expecting it to take, like a day, maybe a day and a half, and ended up completing the carving in 4 hours. I was like, wow, that's easy. I need to do another one.
That's awesome, man.
That's been fun. And other than that, I've been working on a dresser.
You have an ETA on that thing? How far along is it?
My wife would kill me if it's not done by her wedding, which is late May.
Her wedding?
But yeah. Yes, by her wedding. By her birthday.
Isn't that already happened?
That was an interesting sentence.
Something
there.
You need to tell us?
Some people give rings. I give a dresser. we'll see.
Nice.
Yeah. Do you have any other gigantic projects in mind after that? Or are you going to keep it small for a bit?
The next big thing is a 300-pound flywheel that I can then power a lathe and a scroll saw and possibly like a table saw or joiner as well with it. So
nice.
It's coming.
Awesome. Cool. Zach, how about you, man? What you been working on?
Well, the hardware for those big barn doors finally showed up. So I've been working on those, doing the patina. I'm using that Sculpt Nouveau stuff, and I figured out this really cool. So they sent me this copper stuff, like a copper patina, and it's really cool on mild steel. So I'm kind of mastering the technique of using the black stuff and then spraying the black stuff on there and then wiping on like the copper stuff, and you get like almost like an oiled bronze thing, which is pretty cool. So I'm trying to figure out how to I'm messing around with it. There's really no like methodology. I'm just kind of developing that on the fly, but I think it's going to be really cool.
What is the because I've never used that Sculpt Nouveau stuff. What is the look in person like on the metal? Does it look like, is it all one kind of solid color like you painted it, or is it there's some kind of texture to it?
There's texture. I mean, you can kind of vary it. So like if you spray it on and let it sit for a long, you can get a pretty solid black look. But I mean, I think there's always going to be a little bit of like that texture and stuff. Or what I like doing is kind of applying it like medium and then you'd neutralize it with water, and then you wipe, like I like to sand it down a bit with like some 300 grit or something that's not too aggressive, and you can kind of selectively like burnish it, and you get like a really cool textured kind of old medieval look, which is what I like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the piece, but yeah, I get more. I always feel like anytime I talk about a product, people are going to think that I'm like being sponsored by them, but I mean, I'm not, but if it's hard to do a podcast about building stuff and not talk about the products and the tools that you like, because that's half the fun. But
that's why I use all old Stanleys.
Yeah.
And boiled linseed oil from your neighbor.
Yes.
Sponsored by my neighbor.
Yeah. But so, yeah. And one of the things that I didn't anticipate on doing on those, the doors. So the hardware has to mount 2 inches in from the outsides. This might be useful to anybody else out there who plans on building barn doors. That's why I'm mentioning it. Make sure that if you're building your door to spec, I think the general rule, and I built this to the customer's specification, so this isn't on my shoulders. But I think your door is supposed to be 2 inches bigger than the opening. It shouldn't be an issue, but I think that's just so that you don't have to worry about like aligning it and getting a little bit of light through the corners. Or if you don't have like some sort of bottom rail, you wouldn't want the door to like be able to swing into the opening. Granted, there's usually some sort of track on the bottom that'll prevent it from doing that. But just some information for anybody out there who might be doing that. And also those brackets that hold the mounts for the wheels, like I said, those need to mount 2 inches in, at least through the hardware I used, from the outside of the door. So that can throw off your stuff. So I'd actually make these gusset plates for the corners to where I could mount them, because there wasn't any frame there. I anticipated on bolting them through the frame. So
nice.
That, and I picked up an old copper fire extinguisher. I don't know if it's in this room or not. I don't know. Anyway, you know, like the old copper extinguishers? You've seen those?
Yeah.
Big. Somebody wants me to turn that into a lamp for them, so I'm going to do that.
Cool.
Cool. And squeaky chair.
Yeah, the goat chair.
Yes.
It's being silent now. Zach has a chair that squeaks just like a goat.
I could easily fix it with like some spray lube, but it's sort of entertaining.
It's just too good now. So I haven't done it. It's just too good. That's awesome. Well, I have been working on a bunch of stuff, and I have like severe project ADD right now. It's ridiculous. Like, I just have like 4 different projects currently going. So next week I'm going to be gone. So any of you live listeners, we will not have a live stream next Thursday night. Because I will be at the John C. Campbell Folk School for the week doing the arts and crafts bookcase class there. So I'm super pumped about that. But I need to bring some hand tools with me just as a kind of just so you have your own stuff, so you're a little more comfortable.
What?
With it. Yeah. Yeah, I know. So I've been doing hand tool work today. And I also did some sharpening. So, like, I was just completely outside of my element in every way. it was fun, man. I'm building a little tool tote, kind of similar to what Jay did, that little dovetailed tool tote he did. Mine is kind of in line with that. Just really basic, a way to carry a couple hand planes and a, you know, handful of chisels and marking gauge and all that kind of stuff. So, this is my second time ever doing hand-cut dovetails, and it's been an interesting process for sure. I figured out why having sharp chisels is a good thing, and I'm using walnut for the sides, and then, well, I guess walnut for 2 of the sides, and then I think it's poplar for 2 of the other sides. It was part of this whole scrap pile I had bought a while ago, but
that'd
I was
be a
getting
fun mix.
It looks awesome. I posted a picture on my Instagram, but the poplar was tearing out like crazy, and luckily it was all, you know, kind of where, you know, you're chiseling to your line on the inside of the dovetail, so nobody will ever see it, and so it was not a huge deal, and it was only on the first kind of board that it actually did that. But I was like, oh, these chisels need to be sharpened. So because I had literally never sharpened them. I got them out of the box. They're a set of Narex bench chisels. I think I've used them like twice. And, you know, I'd never even sharpened them. So got my little, what's that thing
called? deceptive things about dovetails is a lot of people will tell you, you know, practice on, you know, like pine or something soft, but you really have to have an extremely sharp chisel to do soft wood.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of regret going with the poplar sides. I just, it was weird because I want to have like the two sides on the end be kind of tall so I can cut out basically a place to stick like a dowel through for the handle. And so it's going to be, you know, your kind of classic like tool tote. And so I wanted the grain on all four sides to be running in the same direction so that that doesn't cause problems. So I had this one really wide piece of poplar that was like half an inch thick from this scrap pile that I had bought. And it was like, okay, this is perfect. But yeah, it's a little tricky to work with for sure. But I sharpened it and it is cutting a lot nicer, that's for sure. I have that work sharp system and that works really, really well. So I don't know what bevel degree, what bevel angle do you sharpen to, James, on your chisels?
I keep different sets at different bevel angles. My bench chisels, I sharpen to 30 degrees because the blade lasts longer. Huh. I have a soft wood set that I sharpen at 25 degrees because they cut easier and they're just better for soft woods.
Cool.
But then I also have a set that I sharpen at 15 degrees. And those are my carving chisels. They're extremely sharp, but if you look at them funny, they dull.
I've followed the Chris Schwarz method, which is 35 degrees on everything.
35? Wow. That's
I think it's 35. I could be wrong. It's either 30 or 35. I think it's pretty...
Probably 30.
Yeah. 35 is pretty blunt.
Yeah,
I did 25, and then I put a little micro bevel on it at 30 degrees, which on the work sharp is really, really easy to do.
You put a micro bevel on your chisel?
Yeah. Is that weird?
That's not good.
Hmm. They came with a micro bevel.
Well, it depends on what you're wanting to do. If you're using the flat side of the chisel as a reference face, basically you're putting a bevel so that the tip of the chisel is no longer flat on the wood. It's actually lifting up a little bit. And so you can never cut a perfectly flat line in line with the flat of the chisel.
So I put the bevel on the same side as the...
Oh, on the bevel side. Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I sharpened them at 25 degrees and then changed it to 30 and then put the micro bevel on just real quick. Just because that's kind of what they came with, so I figured why not give it a shot, and I had no idea what I'm doing. So, but that work sharp thing is awesome. I don't know if you've ever tried one of those, but it is like sharpening for dummies. It's the most easy thing ever. It's just, you know, just kind of put your chisel in the little slot, and you're pretty much
They're
good
fantastic
to go.
They're fantastic for flattening your... what are plane irons?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the problem is, I was also, while I had my sharpening stuff out, I was going to go ahead and sharpen the plane irons. Well, my Veritas low-angle jack, the blade, the iron is too wide to fit in the little work sharp, you know, holder. So I had to, like, kind of freehand it, and it went okay, but it didn't go great. And then I accidentally... It, like, slipped out of my hand and fell on the floor and chipped the corner, so then I had to grind. It was a whole thing. So, yeah, welcome to sharpening. So that was a good experience, though. So, yeah, I got my chisels sharpened and cut through the poplar much nicer. So excited
so
to put that out.
Question.
Yeah.
Are you missing hair on your non-dominant arm?
No, no. I was in such a rush, I didn't even try to shave my arm. So,
all right, so check it out. I don't know if you guys can see that. Probably not.
Yeah.
Chris Schwarz, about my love of 35 degrees.
Wow.
I was right.
35, really?
Yeah. Man. So I just copy him because I figure he knows more than me. So if I just do everything that I can that I know, if I can just copy him in all regards possible, then I should be in decent shape.
Interesting.
So, when are you building your Roman bench?
Yeah, the work sharp doesn't even go to 35. It only goes to 30. So that would be tricky. Huh.
Mine goes to 11. For all the Spinal Tap fans out there.
Yes. Yeah, so anyway, it's been an interesting experience. I've been using that David Barron dovetail guide, so that's kind of like made it way, way easier to at least make my lines straight. And yeah, it's been pretty fun to use hand tools. And so I'll hopefully get that buttoned up tomorrow. I leave Saturday afternoon for the class, And so I won't have a video out on my channel next week. And it'll be nice to have a week off and just kind of go and do woodworking and not have to worry about filming it. So it's going to be a bit of a...
Sounds like a really fun time.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of weird. I'm going to probably still try to get some footage. Like, the shop is still open at night while, you know, like, after dinner and stuff, after the class is done for the day. So I might, like, go back and try to get enough footage to make a video out of the trip. But it'll be nice to, like, work for 8 hours in the shop with zero worry about the camera. So, yeah, it's going good. And the other big thing I've been working on is dust collection. I see Joshua from the live chat just asked if I got my Cyclone together. It's funny. So Jay and I both independently landed on the same dust collector, and like we are putting it together at the exact same time. So we've been like texting back and forth for the past week, like, you know, texting each other progress updates. It's hilarious. Like, it is identical. We're both using 6-inch PVC and, you know, doing the whole thing. So that's coming together nicely. I'm waiting. I've got an electrician coming out on Saturday to get the contactor wired up, because I guess, I don't know, since I'm using a remote system, that needs to be using the one tin from the contactor so that it can control the dust collector and not actually have to run the 220 or whatever. So, I don't know, I'm not an electrician, but this motor is super crazy powerful, though. It requires a 30-amp 220 circuit, so it's a pretty serious motor, so I'm excited to turn it on for the first time. I still haven't even gotten to turn it on, so it's just been sitting there on the wall in my shop for like a week. So so I'm excited to get that thing going. That's going to be kind of life changing with all the duct work lined up. That's going to be pretty amazing. So
I forgot to mention the other big thing I did this week. It's funny how sometimes the big stuff you do totally escapes you. I built that ergonomical chair model,
yeah,
which has like everything on it is adjustable, like the front and back of the seat pan height, the armrest height. There's different pivots and degrees and lumbar support angles for the backrest and everything. So it's not the most aesthetically pleasing, but it was cool. It worked perfectly. I took it to the guy that I'm going to be building those chairs for and sat in it, and we tinkered around, and everybody in the office sat in it, and we got it exactly where we need it. So I think that's where I should have started with the design instead of actually, because I made models of the chairs in SketchUp. I think it would have been, now I'm going to have to go back and redesign everything with these dimensions, which is good. I mean, I kind of went the long way about discovering that, but it's going to be a super useful tool for any future chair builds, because I can pretty much tailor fit whatever, you know, chair or seating, even benches or anything like that. I'll be able to get it accurately modeled. So that was kind of a big project, but that was fun.
Yeah, that thing is going to be awesome, man. I cannot wait until that gets working. So cool. Well, I guess this week our topic is not really a topic at all. It's just answering questions. So we got a lot of email questions this week. And also, obviously, we've got the live chat always. So that's a good source of questions. So we've got the first one from Jacob. And he's got a question about welding. So he says he has a TIG welder that also does stick. And he's been doing both for 5 years and is pretty proficient. But he's looking at adding a MIG welder just to kind of speed up projects that require a lot of welding, as we've talked about a little bit before. And so he's wondering if we recommend a 120-volt or 240-volt MIG machine. He says he has multiple 240-volt outlets in his garage, so that's not really an issue. He won't really be using MIG for the structural stuff. He'll use stick or TIG for that, and this will just be more for the artsy kind of stuff. So he's looking at the Hobart and Lincoln 120-volt models. So he wants to see what we think about that. What do you guys think? I don't really have a strong opinion on that either way. I feel like if he's got 240, might as well go for it. But, I mean, I know, like, the PowerMIG 210 I have, it'll run on 120 or 240. So it's nice in case you do have some thick steel you need to weld up, even if it's kind of artsy. You can still do it with the same unit, but what do you guys think?
if you have, you know, if you have the money and you have the electricity there, get 240. It's going to be far more flexible for you. But, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's a possibility, go for it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, obviously you don't need it for structural stuff. You got a stick welder. That's probably the best way to do heavy duty structural welding. And I mean, it really depends. If you're only talking a couple hundred, if it's really a budget issue, I think you'd be fine. I think you'll be all I have is a 110 welder, or 120, whichever you prefer. But there's some people that get very particular about.
I still don't understand the difference personally. It's like 110, 120, 220, 240. It's just semantics, I think.
Well, more or less. I mean, it's.
Well, there are some motors that are very specific.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, residential voltage fluctuates enough to where neither one of them is accurate. I think usually like 117 is about the actual. I mean, that varies wherever you're at because it's not. Anyway, regardless, when I say 110, you guys will know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean, that's all I have. I have the 140C, the Lincoln, which is their commercial 110 model. Hobart puts out a good welder. Miller does as well.
Yep.
I think it'll be fine for anything you need. And even if you do need to do something really big with a 110, you can just bevel the material and do multiple passes. I've never even had to do that. I use my welder on pretty much every project, and it's 110, and it suits me fine. That being said, if I could have gotten one that was capable of, you know, 220 for a couple hundred bucks more, which came out like 3 months after I bought mine, I would have bought that one.
Yeah.
Do I need it? No, but it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it.
Yeah.
I think once you get started with MIG, you're going to want to, it's going to be your go-to for most everything.
Yeah.
Unless you're, you know, really wanting to do that precise weld with a TIG or you have something massive you need to stick for.
Yep. Yeah, I think that PowerMIG 210, I could not recommend more. It is like the easiest welder I've ever used, and it's also, it'll do TIG if you add the like accessory kit that you can buy. But you know, it's just foolproof. You dial in the thickness of the material you're working with, and it's amazing. It really just works super, super well. So I don't know what your budget is, Jacob, but that's a really good one. All right, so we've got another question from Make Build Modify, who is an awesome patron of ours. He's actually our top patron, so thank you so much, Justin, for the support. So his question is, do we think it's a good or bad idea to borrow money to buy tools? I think this is much more a like life question than a shop related question. I mean, I personally do not do that. If I want a tool and I cannot afford it, I either save up or just don't get
steal it
or try to get it for free. So that's
I only buy tools if I have a particular project that needs it.
Yeah.
I don't buy tools because I think I might use it in the future. And if I'm buying it for a client work, it's incorporated into the price of the project.
Yeah.
I think the only time I would ever do that is I knew that in buying it, I would be able to pay it off within a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Because of that tool.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen a few people do that with like a really nice lathe. Because you can turn off projects and sell them fairly quickly.
Yep.
But other than a few things like that, no.
Yeah, I think like a laser or a CNC might fall in that category as well. If you're planning on, like, if your business model is to do those kind of craft fair items that you batch out and it's going to save you a ridiculous amount of labor time, those are the types. That's like the only type of tool that I might consider doing that. But obviously it's a really big risk because, you know, you could go into debt and then you could not sell the product that you're making and just have this thing that's just kind of an anchor on you. And I'm not a fan of that. I have so many hobbies that I can usually sell something else from one of my other hobbies to fund whatever new thing I want in this hobby. So I haven't been put in that position.
I think the exception is credit cards. I mean, not saying it should be an exception, but it's very common for me to use my credit cards. If that counts as technically borrowing money to pay for tools, I am very, very guilty of doing that.
But are you like paying that credit card off that same month, or are you like hanging onto that debt
rolling
for many,
debt.
Many months?
Yeah, it's usually the plan is to pay it off that month.
Yeah, because at like 18% interest, that is not a good investment. That'll crush you.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. Just, you know.
I have done that.
Pizza ends up, you buy a pizza and each slice ends up costing you like $20 by the time you pay for it.
I have done that for like when you get the bonuses or flight miles or things like that and you pay it off at the end of the month. But I don't.
And, you know, there are some business cards. Some business cards give you a 0% APR or something like that. So as part of your business model, if you want to annuitize that cost over the, you know, the length of a year or whatever, that's fine. I mean, if you're not accruing any sort of interest on that, I don't see there's a huge issue with that. But to me, especially as a hobbyist, there's absolutely zero reason to go into debt for woodworking tools. That seems, I don't know, not like a good idea. So,
but if you're gonna go into debt for something, I think woodworking tools is a great thing to go into debt for.
I don't know, I'd rather be in debt.
It's second
like
to a house.
Yeah, like a sweet car or something, like a Porsche. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's equity. That's kind of almost not, doesn't count.
That's a tool.
Well, if you're gonna go into debt buying Festool products, because they have the best resale value of any tool out there. Like, it is incredible. You can sell used Festool stuff for like less than 10% off of the new price. It is amazing.
Or like Lee Nielsen.
Yeah, yes, yeah, for sure. Lee Nielsen's
Stanley's gone up in price.
Yeah. There are certain tools that you will it is truly, I mean, it's not an investment. You're not going to probably make money on it, but it's almost like you can borrow it for free. So, yeah, that's something else to consider. Cool.
When it becomes a part of your net worth.
Yeah. Well, my shop, I need to, like, talk to my insurance company because, like, I'm sure, like, the amount of tools I have accounted for is not included in my regular old homeowner's policy. So I need to figure that out because I'm not sure how that works, but that would be bad. Anyway, so I guess we have another question from Jacob, and he asks if we have incorporated leather into any of our projects in any way. So I think, James, you're the only one who has, right? Zach, you haven't done any leather either?
Not yet. I did have to do, I am kind of dabbling into the upholstery world. I went to Joann Fabrics the other day. This is about as dabbling in the upholstery world as I get, just walking in the door there. And so I needed to buy some cushions for that chair. And holy crap, their high-density foam stuff, 4 inches thick, it was like $70 a square yard.
Oof.
Yeah. So that was pretty much as far into it as I got. And I left, and I'm like, okay, so we're going to go to an upholster for this. So that'll come down
cheaper,
the line. I'm not sure exactly how it's going
to
work out yet, but
yeah. Yeah. It's I have a piece of leather that I bought probably 6 months ago now. That's literally just been hanging in my shop, and I want to make a guitar strap out of it, but I feel like that'd be the most boring project video ever. It's like, let me cut a line on this side and a line on this side and punch a hole in it, and I've got a guitar strap. You know, it's like, unless I do some sort of fancy, like, leather carving or something, I don't know. I've been hanging on to it. I want to figure out something cooler to do with it because...
You should make an old Western belt out of it and, like, engrave Johnny and put some turquoise around it.
That'd be awesome.
And then work for the Atlanta show.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I would love a really ridiculous, like, Western-style guitar strap. I think that would be super fun. Like, you know, like old-school Johnny Cash style, you know, with, like, their name all carved on it and just, you know, some ridiculous, like, rattlesnake or something popping out of the top. And that could be kind of fun. Do some leather carving or something. But, yeah, I have not done much leather. James, was the tool roll, is that the only thing you've done? I mean, I guess you did a lot before.
I made my way through college. Yeah. Selling leather armor, and so I've done, you know, belts and bags and all sorts of things, but yeah, the hand tool world, kind of, you end up doing leather in some place or another for straps or hinges or things like that. It's kind of one of those, it goes hand in glove.
Yeah.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Yeah, it seems like a really fun thing to get into. But the other thing I've, like...
It's actually really cheap to get into. The tools for it are nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
The leather itself is the only expense.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, I've kind of grappled with whether my audience would be into it or not. But I think, to me, leather working and woodworking go pretty well hand in hand. I mean, you know, it's... and leather working is cool because you could do that... Even if you're in an apartment, I mean, in a tiny space, you could do leather working, and it's quiet, and I mean, it's you know, it's pretty cool stuff. So cool. We have another question from Make Build Modify. He says, "How far will you travel to get a good deal on a tool or materials?"
I think that depends on the kind of the overall scope of whatever it is. I mean, if it's $100 off of something and it's a, you know, 3-hour, 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, but no, probably not. I mean, it depends. If it's kind of a hard question to answer, but I guess if the discount is less than the gas and the time invested in into getting it, then it's not a good deal.
Yeah.
My drive time is worth $50 an hour to me for gas, expense on the car, and my time.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems
my truck
right.
takes about 50 gallons an hour to drive. So
the one exception to that, though, is if it's a very rare thing
or
hard to get, then my driving distance becomes much greater.
Yeah.
I've gone, 8 hours for a $100 piece because it was something I couldn't get anywhere else.
Wow. That's true.
Man. Yeah, see, I have not. I'm trying to even think what the furthest I've driven. I usually just set up, like, Craigslist alerts in my area if I'm looking for something and just wait for it to pop up. So that way I don't have to. Because for me, like, for all of us now, it's like we have our own businesses. Like, I can't afford to spend a whole day going out and buying a, you know, planer or something. You know, I need to be able to go out, get it, and be back in like, 3 hours, you know? So... I did, like, drive an hour and a half to get that huge pile of walnut a while ago, but that was completely worth it. You know, that was 400 board feet of walnut, enough to last me for months and months, and it was a great deal. So I don't know what my maximum range is, but I know my Craigslist alerts, like, the farthest away from me is Knoxville, and that's a 2-hour drive. So I guess that's kind of my arbitrary radius. Like, I don't think I'd be willing to drive to Atlanta even, which is 3.5 hours for a tool deal. Because especially, like, if it's a tool, then transportation is a pain. Like, I had to drive my truck, and then your gas price is more expensive, and, like, my truck doesn't have cruise control, and you've got this giant piece of machinery in the back of your car, and you got to worry if it's going to rain, and I don't know. There's just so many factors there. So it really depends. But, like, you know, I'm upgrading my saw stop. The guy who's buying my current one from me is... in Virginia. He's like 6 hours away, but the retail price, including like shipping and tax versus what I'm selling it for, is $1,000 difference. So at that kind of discount, yeah, it's probably worth it, you know? So, it just depends, and it depends how much you want the item. And it depends if you just want to go do it on the weekend and not have to, you know, like, spend your work day doing it. So, yeah. Let's see what else we have. We got one from Joshua. It's a podcast question, and he asked if we had ever thought of setting up a voicemail for questions. So Yes, something I'm very interested in doing. But this whole phone number thing is kind of weird. Like, you have to set it up through Skype, and I don't know how the voicemail files, like, get sent to you that way. But so I know what WoodTalk does a lot is, you know, pretty much every phone has a, like, voice memos or some kind of app like that. And if you guys want to do a call-in, a quote-unquote call-in question, you can record a voice memo and just email it to us. And that way we can play it on the show and answer it, and it'll be basically the same as a voicemail. So if you guys want to do that, just record a voice memo on your phone and shoot it over to us, and we'll put it on the show, because that is easy. I can easily add any sort of audio file, but I don't know how the whole Skype voicemail thing works. So, yeah. What else?
Someday we'll figure something out.
Yeah. Let's see. We've got from Evan, if we could buy a 16-inch radial arm saw, would we?
What's a radial arm saw? I have a regular arm saw. Does that count?
For me, no. Because I feel like a compound sliding miter saw kind of replaces a lot of the uses for a radial arm saw in this day and age. Just personally. I mean, they can do dados. I mean, they can't run a dado stack, but they can, you know, be a set depth and cut dados just in long, more passes. I'm just trying to think of something that a regular compound sliding miter saw can't do that a radial arm saw can. I don't know. Do you guys have anything on that?
I think that would be, at the moment, I would say no, but that would be contingent upon a few things. If I had a giant shop space.
Yeah.
And it were really cheap. Sure, why not? Like, I think one of the things, there are a few neat tricks that you can do with radial arm saws that I think are probably easier to do on radial arm saws than sliding miter saws and all that sort of thing. Because you can do, you can set the height. You can do, especially if you're doing like mitered dados, I think it would be easier to do that on a radial arm saw than a table saw. So it's easier to set your angles, and you can, since you're cutting from the top, you can actually, it'd be a lot easier to kind of creep up on your dados. I mean, you can do the same thing on a table saw, but then you have to, you know, fidget with some sort of a fence or a miter jig, whereas on the radial arm saw, you just set it and go for it. So do I really want one? No. But if the opportunity presented itself and I had the space for it, sure, I'd probably be able to find a use for it.
You've seen Frank's setup.
Yes.
Frank Howarth.
Frank is
that,
the
I mean,
only
if I had the shop for it, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, his whole setup is fantastic.
Yeah. But I also feel like every single time he's using that thing, he's going to chop his fingers off, because like it seems like he has to really pull on it. And I just feel like one day his like fingers are going to slip. Or, I don't know. It just watching him use his radial arm saw stresses me out. I don't know what it is. It just seems kind of jerky, and it doesn't have that kind of smooth, you know, like motion like a sliding miter saw would. I don't know what it is, but yeah, he definitely has an amazing setup on there. And the dust collection looks incredibly good. So that's miter saws generally do not have good dust collection. So, but neither do radial arm saws. So like Frank designed his whole system. So yeah. We've got another one from B.R. Delaney about building his furniture business, and he says he seems to be hitting a wall as far as forward progress. So he's barely scraping by with the commissions he's had, and he's not sure how to get himself out there more. And so he says it's not really a financial issue, it's more of a work issue. So he's looking to basically grow more. So I don't know, what do you guys think about this? I mean, he says he has a custom made page and an Etsy page, which is I think a great start. To me, I think building some sort of social media following of some kind of dedicated clientele would be the next logical step. I don't know how good or bad your website is, BR. That obviously is another huge one, getting some, you know, Google ranking on your website so people in your local area might find your website organically. Yeah, what do you guys think?
Facebook, Craigslist, YouTube, Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
I take this. I take more of the streets approach. I would get out there and check out all the local shops that sell stuff that is similar to what you're selling. Get out there, meet the owner, have a card, maybe have something and say, hey, would you be interested in carrying some of my products? And, you know, that's kind of my approach to things. And that's really what got me going. And from there, you know, if you can kind of build a relationship with the store owners, especially if you can get one that's not commission work or consignment, I'm sorry. Consignment can be good, but it can also be a total pain in the butt. I'm not saying it's not worth doing, but you know, if you can find a place that really values your work and you get a good relationship and you can get them a wholesale price and make it appetizing for them to stock your products and buy them from you, then you can, that really sets the pace and you get momentum going. And then, you know, for me, I did the same thing. And then I had somebody that was, I became their custom builder. So if somebody wanted something that they didn't have, I'd meet with this guy and, you know, she'd take a cut out of it, but still. And then from there, the word of mouth. So there's just that's the whole different approach to doing the internet thing, which has its place and is super valuable. But, you know, I started more by getting out there and meeting people and getting my stuff in stores and you know, building the word of mouth thing. So,
yeah,
that's my advice.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I think also if you can find any sort of kind of art studios, I mean, that obviously depends on the types of pieces you're producing, but that's another good option. And really, it seems like if you're going after that production model, coming up with some sort of catalog of options just so people can at least see like what the basic things that are available to them, and then they can customize it from there. Cause like, I think a lot of times, I mean, people are not furniture designers, you know, so they are used to shopping at IKEA and places like this where they look at a whole bunch of options and pick the one they like, you know? So if you can have something like that available, you know, some sort of actual line of products. It seems like a lot of the really successful furniture people, that is how they are successful. I know like this Jory Brigham guy I follow quite a bit. He has, you know, a set line of furniture that are kind of his core line, if you will. And then obviously those can all be customized because they're made anyway to order. So I think those are all kind of some good tips there. So, cool. Well, I think that pretty much covers the question from the audience, unless, we got one more from Joshua Luther. At what point should a person stop buying tools? Should I even ask this? Well, to me, never. Till you run out of space. And if you run out of space, just get more space. That's my mantra. I don't know about you guys.
I'd say usually when your credit card is completely maxed out, it's a good time to stop.
You know, I used to think the same thing until I'm sure you've all seen the Studley tool chest.
Oh yeah.
The fascinating thing about that is not how intricate the tool chest is or how nice the tools are, but that at some point in his life, he knew that these were the tools that he was going to use for the rest of his life.
Yep.
And they were the only tools he was going to use the rest of his life. So he could make a chest that fit those tools precisely and worked them all together. And there's part of that really would intrigue me to see, you know, would I be satisfied with just using a certain set of tools for the rest of my life?
It is.
And there's another part of me is like, I'm living in the 21st century. I'm not Studley.
Well, and I mean, even Chris Schwarz, right? You know, I mean, like the anarchist tool chest is kind of a similar idea. I mean, it's less specific, but it's that kind of idea that, you know, you get rid of your upgrade-itis, basically. You know, quit always hunting for the next better thing, which I think most of us are guilty of because we live in a world where we are constantly marketed to and constantly inundated with advertising. And you know, I know personally, I think all three of us watch a bunch of other woodworking videos, and every time I see a tool that's like nicer than mine, I'm like, man, maybe I should upgrade my XYZ. And it's very easy to get caught in that cycle. And I know I'm particularly really bad at that. It would probably be a good exercise for me to like go on a 1-year like tool buying Freeze or something, you know, just make do with what I have. And, but that, I don't know, like gear has always been one of the most exciting parts of hobbies for me, whether that was, you know, homebrewing or, you know, I remember as a kid, I got into fishing and bought all this fishing gear. And then the first time I actually went fishing, I'm like, man, this is terribly boring. But I was like super into all the, like the rods and the lures and, you know, all the various hardware that went along with fishing. But I actually hated fishing. And it's been the same thing for multiple hobbies since. So I know gear is just, I just love researching cool new tools. So yeah, never will I quit looking for new tools.
So I got a last minute question from Nico Palacios, I think. Said, hey, Zach, this question is more directed at you. I just moved to Palm Harbor, Florida, and I'm trying to figure out where to buy a material, wood and metal. Any recommendations? He's from San Diego, so probably there.
Yeah.
it's rough down here, man. There's a few places. So I think Palm Harbor is actually maybe 30 minutes south of me. So we're actually pretty close.
Nice.
My advice comes at the cost of a beer.
I think he is a patron, so answer him freely.
Oh, okay. That counts.
Yeah.
So there's a few places, and I think he's closer to him than I am. I'm up in Newport Richey, which is, like I said, probably 30 minutes north of him. And there's actually one good thing about here. I go to a place called STR Metal Recycling, and they recycle metal, and they sell metal too. So that's where I get all my angle iron and pretty much anything I've ever needed they've had, which is cool. They're really cheap. So I don't know of any other metal places, because it's like three blocks from my house, and I just go there. So as far as wood,
coming up to Illinois.
Yeah.
What's that?
Better off coming up to Illinois.
Yeah. I don't know. The metals, the STR is pretty cool. And the cool thing about it there is there's a guy named Garth there, and he likes PBR. So if you're going to buy a bunch of, I'm serious. If you're going to buy a bunch of metal, bring him a 10 pack of PBR and say that you're friends with Zach, and I'm not going to say he'll give you a deal, but he might do something for you. I don't want to get him in trouble if for some odd reason somebody's listening, but
that's awesome.
He's a good dude. So yeah, he drinks PBR. Bring that at the occasion. Let's awesome. See. As far as wood, depends. Hardwood's really rough for me to get around here. I usually have to drive down to the Woodcraft in Clearwater. It's really overpriced, but there's not a whole lot of other options that I'm aware of. There's also, I think, A&M Hardwoods, which is around. You have to set up an account, which is really easy to do. They have the basic stuff, and I think you can get it cheaper there. There are a few little small boutique-y hardware stores that supposedly have exotics and stuff down there, but I haven't been to them. So that's pretty much all I have for you at the moment. If you find something, or if any of our listeners in the area have any suggestions, let me know and I will bring it up in the next podcast.
Cool.
So yeah,
well, I think that'll do it for our Q&A session. So that was cool. That was fun. We'll have to do one of these every once in a while. It's good to kind of, you know, just kind of accumulate all these questions, and it's good to kind of get them all in one go. So it seems as though the joke of the week has been revived as a segment. This is now the second week in a row.
This is good.
Yeah, we've had a joke of the week. So I don't know. I think this name is even a joke, but I'm sorry if this is your real name. I don't want to make fun of your name, but the name he put was Hugh Jasmine. So, like, I'm thinking Hugh Jazz Man or something. I don't know.
Is it J-A-S-S-M-A-N?
Z-Z. So, I don't know. Maybe you just got a funny name. And if so, I don't mean to offend you, but you did write in a joke of the week. So, that is what it is. So, the joke is, what do you get if you throw oak into a wood chipper? Oakmeal.
I love that the corny woodworking joke is coming back. This is that like was my idea.
Episode
that was
one
my idea.
Throwback.
Yeah, we did it in episode one, and somebody told me it was like the dumbest thing they've ever heard, and we need to delete that segment. And now it's coming back, and I'm happy.
I gotta get a sound effect because I know I can add sound effects. You know, I need the ba-doom-tsh sound effect. That would be pretty fun. So cool. Well, what have we been watching? I'm going to kick it off because I found this guy yesterday and I have been so impressed with his videos. The channel's name is Suburban Homestead. Nothing to do with woodworking. It is this guy and he is basically growing food and gardening in, you know, the suburbs basically. So, I had got this 55-gallon drum in anticipation of using it with my dust collection system, but it ended up being too tall. I guess it's not a standard size 55-gallon drum, but so my wife has recently gotten really into gardening, and she was looking at composting stuff online and stumbled across this video, and he turned a 55-gallon drum into basically this like kind of drum rotisserie thing that you put your compost in, and it turns it, rotates it, and makes it compost faster. So really cool project, really simple. And he has just all kinds of cool gardening stuff, but his production quality is unbelievable. It's like TV show quality. I mean, just really, really cool stuff. So if you're at all interested in gardening and that kind of stuff, definitely check him out. James, I see you got a cool one this week, and that was also an awesome pick.
I've mentioned Bearcat before, but he just put out a video making this bench for a library, and it is incredible. A very, very simple wooden bench. Extremely simple, other than the fact that it is completely carved top to bottom and artistically gorgeous, all out of walnut, just severely beautiful all around. And
yeah,
you've got to take a look at the video. Words cannot describe it well enough.
Yeah. That thing was amazing. Yeah, Brian, I know you're a podcast listener, so well done, man. That thing, that was just so cool. I loved the Maloof joints and just so many cool touches to that thing. It inspires me to be better at what we do. So, yeah, really amazing work. Zach, how about you, man?
So I actually have been watching YouTube this week. That's a first for a while. So I've been kind of I've been dabbling with that new forge I got from Whitlock's, which is really, really cool. I think I just got it right, actually, as we were recording the last podcast. But so I got to play with it this week, and it is way more efficient than my other one, the one that I built. So I have been doing a little bit of blacksmithing in my downtime. I made a little heart for Valentine's Day for my wife. And I found a YouTube channel of blacksmithing that I think is actually interesting and informative. It's Alex Steele, A-L-E-C-S-T-E-E-L-E. this guy's like, I don't know, he's probably like 21, maybe. But there's like videos of him. I mean, his videos go back to like 5 years ago when he was like, looks like he's 12 years old, like forging stuff, so... Kid, he knows what he's doing and he makes everything look super easy, and he's got a personality that is great for bringing life to blacksmithing videos. Yeah, he's very energetic, so I've been watching that and learning a whole bunch from that. So
on that note, I have a friend of mine who lives here in North Carolina, and he is an incredible knife maker, and he makes hatchets. It's like his big thing. He does it full time. He's like 20 years old. Hoffman blacksmithing.
Awesome.
So just you saying a young blacksmith, that reminded me of him. Definitely check out his channel, Zach. He is incredible. He was on that Forged in Fire show recently.
Oh yeah.
And won. I mean, like, dude, he's 20.
Oh wow.
He's like 20. It's ridiculous. His shop is, I mean, I couldn't even fit my car in the shop. It's so freaking small. Like, the amount of amazing work he puts out there is just incredible. So, Yeah.
Does he have a like a gigantic auto hammer and stuff?
He's got a hydraulic press. Doesn't have an auto hammer, but he's got the press, which is super helpful because most of his work is hatchets, which start out as like ridiculously thick steel, you know, like inch thick steel. So, but he is jacked because he still does a ton of handwork. I mean, he's like crazy strong. So, he's got a really cool set up in that tiny shop. Wilmot, like, water-cooled grinder. Just really, really cool stuff. Like, the platen on his grinder is actually water-cooled, so the metal doesn't heat up as much. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I'd really like to get more into that sort of thing. And I had, like, a... you know when you have, like, a... going through puberty here in front of the microphone again. You know, sometimes you just like have an experience because like, well, I'm at best, I'm an amateur blacksmith. I really don't know a whole lot of what I'm doing, but I had a very reassuring week and it's just a good feeling to get out there and try something new and have it work. That's like one of my favorite things about just being in the shop is when you try something new and it works and you just get like this confidence boost. so yeah, I have a lot of enthusiasm to do some more smithing work. So
yeah it's a ton of fun, man. I need to, my forge has not even been fired up in like probably 6 months. I need to really, it's hard because I can't figure out like how to really incorporate it with my like paid work, you know. So like if I was doing it, it would just be purely for fun, which obviously there's something to be said for that, but there's only so much time that I can actually spend in the shop. So I need to like be really, really focused when I'm in there. So,
I'm going to be, I just to tie on to what you're saying, I kind of force it to be like, I like taking on things that I'm like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to incorporate this? Like, this is a skill that I want to make money off of and, want to be able to incorporate into my career, I guess is a better way to put it. But so on these sliding barn doors, I'm actually going to be doing a fair amount of blacksmithing on those. At least I plan to. If I'm absolutely terrible with it, I might not make it. But I want to forge. I'll obviously probably forge a bunch of nails for them. I'm going to forge the handles, like the slide, holes for them. Trying to figure out which style I want to go with, and hopefully it's within my abilities to do so. But
so, speaking of that, did you watch the Rainfall Projects guy? Have you seen him, Zach? I shouted him out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
I haven't.
Dude,
I remember you mentioning.
Go watch the video where he does the handles for his giant barn doors, because that's he forges the handles, and
oh really?
So cool, like super. Like, not crazy, overly ornate, which is not, like, the style of blacksmithing that I really like. I like a more kind of simplistic, modern look. And he didn't even have a forge. He just uses an oxy torch and heats up the steel and then does all his work. So, definitely go check out his video where he does the handles.
Every time you mention Rainfall Projects, I think of the primitive YouTube channel name. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
that guy's awesome. It's like Primitive Technology or something
primitive
like
technologies,
that.
Technologies, yeah.
I don't know Australia. If anybody hasn't seen it. You haven't seen him before, James?
Oh, yeah, no.
I have not, no.
Or Johnny? Oh, my God, it's awesome. I mean, it's not really...
He makes me look like I am high-tech.
He does. I mean, this guy, it's not really, like, directly related to what we're doing, but it's kind of in the same spirit of building stuff. It's just a video of this guy, like, going out into the woods... And like he'll build a house with like a furnace and a kiln, and like build the shingles for the roof. It's pretty much just a guy like
mud from the ground,
showing you how to survive with absolutely nothing, and like how to make fire. And it's really, really cool. Nice. Really cool.
Yeah, I'll check that out. That's cool. Cool. Well, I think I guess the last thing we got is tool of the week. So mine is the David Barron dovetail guide. That thing is amazing. It's like dovetail for dummies right there. Like, if you can't hand cut dovetails with that thing, just stop. Just don't do it anymore, because it is like as easy as possible. So that's mine. How about you guys?
I have been absolutely loving. I got a set of carving chisels from Two Cherries, and just loving them. It's hard not to love a good set of carving chisels, but yeah. These are exceptionally nice.
Nice. Zach?
So I ordered up some Off-Center tongs. That's the brand. They're wolf jaw tongs for the forge, and they are awesome. So that's my tool of the week, because prior I had been using a pair of fire tongs that I made myself, and they work, but real fire tongs are so much better.
Type of thing where you need tongs to make tongs?
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Trying to forge that first set that I made without... Trying to forge fire tongs without fire tongs is tricky.
Yeah. That's that's the tricky thing about blacksmithing for sure, is like you need... You know, a lot of guys, they'll make tools as their first project, but you need tools to be able to even make those tools.
Yeah,
so.
And that's something else I'm kind of battling with, is like there's this whole philosophy of like, do I build the tool or order the tool? Like it's a kind of a purist. I mean, and it's not out of laziness, but it's like if you don't have the experience of working with a quality tool.
Yes.
I think it makes it a lot harder for you to build a quality tool. Like if I had a ton of experience using a great quality set of fire tongs, I probably could have forged a way better set of fire tongs. Like, because without that working knowledge of what it should be, or like a cold chisel, like how hard it should be. Like, I don't know. Like I have some S7 tool steel. I think I'm going to try and do it myself, but I won't really know how good it is until I have a known good one to test it against. So,
yeah,
I mean, I guess if it's adequate, it'll be adequate, but I won't know if it's good. So
yeah. That is, that's the trick. I mean, that would be like me building a hand plane, you know, it's like, I am still such a noob with hand planes that I wouldn't know what the good properties that I'd be looking for are. So, yeah, that's a good one. I think we could talk about this a little more in the after show. Buying versus making, because there's a lot of, you know, workbenches, welding tables.
That's a good show topic.
That could be a whole show topic. We'll do a little quick one for the after show. So in case you guys aren't familiar with the after show, it's just for our $5 and up patrons. So go check us out there on Patreon. Live listeners, stay tuned. You guys get it for free. So that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks to everybody who is listening and supporting. This is just so much fun every week. So till next week. Happy building, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye.